You people are waiting to hear a gentleman who has a great deal to say to you. I don't have so very much to say, so I won't infringe on your time. I've had the opportunity of being with Mr. Vogler for the past hour or two, and it's been a very pleasant experience. I'm not going to use any of the canned material I have in my coat pocket by way of introduction, but I'll just tell you what I've learned about Mr. Vogler in being with him for a short time. He has an American family to start with, two boys, who I understand from Mrs. Vogler don't like to be given a definite age. That is, they like to be accredited with a higher bracket always, and when the paper makes a mistake and says they're 12 and 13 instead of 10 and 11, they like that very much. So I think we can say Mr. Vogler has a normal grouping of males in his family to start with. He was born in New York City. He received a part of his education in this country. He attended the Naval Academy for a year, and due to bad health, left the Naval Academy and finished his undergraduate work at MIT. At the time of his confinement, he was employed by the IT&T, and he tells me is still on leave with that organization, and in appearing before us tonight is simply fulfilling an obligation that he made to himself when he was in prison. I am certain that the lecture tours he is going on present somewhat of a trial to him, but he really feels that he has a message, and I know that you feel he has a message. So without taking any more of your time, I would like to present to you Mr. Robert Vogler.
Thank you, Mr. Hanna, Mr. Chairman, ladies, guests, members of the faculty, and members of the student body of the University of Illinois. I'm very happy to be here this evening and to be able to address you. Just before I was arrested in Budapest, there was a story making the rounds. It concerned two small boys who had made outstanding records in their class. The teacher, in order to honor them, called them before the other pupils and praised them, and then turned to the first little boy and said, "Istvan, if you could have anything you wanted, what would be your wish?" Istvan, without hesitation, said, "Teacher, if I could do anything I wanted, I would pick the biggest bouquet of red roses and present it to our great father, Stalin." She then turned to the second little boy and said, "Zoltan, if you could do anything you wanted, what would you do?" Zoltan thought for a moment, and he said, "Well, I would get a big stick and I would hit President Truman over the head." The class roared with laughter, and when the noise had subsided, the teacher turned to Zoltan and she said, "Well, that's very commendable, Zoltan, but how did you come upon this idea?" And Zoltan said, "Well, teacher, if I could hit President Truman over the head, I'd be in the United States of America." Thus, like that little boy, when I express my gratitude for being here tonight, I can say in all sincerity, it is indeed a privilege and a pleasure, because in addressing you, it means that I am back in this great country. It is difficult for one so recently released from the squalor and the spiritual poverty of a communist prison to believe that there still exists a country in the world where security and freedom are considered the prerogatives of every human being. Our nation will never fall prey to totalitarianism if my veneration of American freedom is also shared by those who, unlike me, have never tasted of the cup of communism. It was for this freedom that I yearned and prayed and hoped for 17 long months in a narrow, wet, cold prison cell in Budapest, Hungary. It was for just such simple freedom as I am now exercising. The freedom to talk with my fellow countrymen, to remind them of the blessings of this country, and the grandeur of our nation, and how the cancer of communism can destroy the inner beauty of America. Thus, in talking to you, I am realizing a hope born out of despair, and I am fulfilling a pledge conceived in that hope. However, this hope did not rise, and this pledge was not formulated until some time after I was arrested in Hungary in my capacity as an executive of the International Telephone and Telegraph Corporation. When one is arrested in a communist country, no matter how innocent one may be, it's some time before you have a chance to think of anything except what's going to happen to you next. Whether you're to be tortured, executed, set free, or put in a prison to rot mentally and physically. I was no exception. It was months, long and horrible ones, before I regained the will or the mental stability to contemplate my plight and estimate the chances of my ultimate freedom. It's not possible to look back on such an experience and say which phase was the worst or which episode was the worst. Rather, each phase and each episode is a piece in the communist mosaic of cruelty to make up the finished picture in which the torturers are interested. The prisoner is but a canvas upon which trained tormentors work to achieve the results dictated by the red masters. However, the prisoner's baptism as a police state victim is now appropriately renamed Stalin Street. It is there where is located the dreaded prison of the Hungarian secret police. I was brought there when arrested while driving from Budapest to the Austro-Hungarian border on a routine business trip. The first 3.5 days of carefully designed torture began with the charge that I was engaged in sabotage, espionage, conspiracy, and the smuggling of Hungarians out of the country. Then began the effort to destroy all will and hope. They told me I could not communicate with the United States legation, and that the legation would not wish to inquire about me as it would be tantamount to admitting that I was an American spy. They further told me that I had no protection under international law because I was considered an international spy. It was then that I began to sense what their game was and what was probably in store for me. Obviously, the secret police had been instructed to set the stage for a big production. The invention, the sabotage and spy conspiracy, centered around an American businessman. If they could break me and bend me to their will, it would give an appearance of veracity and validity to my persecution and the additional liquidations that the communists continually find necessary. Consequently, I expected the worst. But what happened was worse than I expected. This communist baptism of brutality was divided into alternate periods of relentless, repetitious questioning and the forced writings of my autobiography, which had to include a detailed account of my every movement in Hungary. My 70-hour inhuman novitiate was unrelieved by either sleep or food. When I approached exhaustion, I was given coffee and cigarettes, both of which probably contained strong stimulants. These stimulants were administered for the purpose of keeping me awake. They allowed me to speak, to test, and to write according to the orders of my captors. The characteristic totalitarian touch was applied at appropriate intervals, such as when I was slugged over the ears and head, and when I was dumped into a tub of ice water in the month of November. When they realized that I would not admit to espionage and the other ridiculous charges, my interrogators worked on me hour after hour, always stressing sabotage. They talked incessantly to me of shortages of materials, failures of production goals, and the normal ups and downs of industrial operations, as though I had single-handedly planned the sabotage of the communist five-year plan. By the 50th hour, still without sleep or food, I began to fall into the pattern designed for me. I began to have hallucinations. I thought I was home again. And the picture of my wife kept flashing before me. At the 60th hour, I collapsed and fell from my chair. Then I was given a statement to sign, a document that later would be used as a confession of sabotage. It was in the main a statement of the valid reasons why our Hungarian subsidiary, which had virtually been taken over by the communists, was not operating at top efficiency. Before I finally signed the statement in utter exhaustion, I argued it word by word and line by line with my captors. The ordeal, which began early on a Friday morning, came to a sudden but brief halt on Monday noon. I was allowed an hour and a half of sleep under a stabbingly strong light. And when I was awakened, again cross-examined, and for the first time shaved. I was then taken before the Attorney General, who cited the Hungarian law that a prisoner could not be held more than 72 hours without charges being preferred.